The face in the mirror is not mine. It takes approximately 3 seconds to process this, and another 2 to understand that processing it changes nothing about what I am about to do. The technician works near my left temple. 2 fingers. Clinical pressure. The particular care of someone correcting a measurement. And then Elias Thorne is in the glass. Not approximation. Not resemblance. His orbital structure, the weight of his brow, the line of his jaw, at this specific angle, in this specific light. I press 2 fingers to my chin and watch him press 2 fingers to his. I part my lips and his lips part. The voice modulator, seated in my left ear, has been calibrated to his pitch and cadence. A correction so precise, it operates below the threshold of conscious hearing. When I swallow, it sounds like him swallowing. The technician closes the case, glances at a tablet, makes a small notation, and says without particular emphasis, "Cleaner application than the last one." He picks up the case and leaves. I don't ask him what that means. I stand alone with the face for a moment before the door. Something in my posture adjusts. Not a choice. More the way a key settles when you find the correct angle after testing the wrong one too many times. Then I walk through into the gala. Describing what I was carrying into that arrangement requires precision, because the softer version is more comfortable, and I have spent considerable time living inside the softer version. It was not ambition. Ambition is a sharper instrument, colder in the hand. What I had was something closer to exhaustion that had finally been assigned a value. 4 years of it, $178,000 in student debt, repayable into my mid-40s. A junior analyst position at a firm where junior operated less as a rank and more as a permanent atmospheric condition. The way certain neighborhoods are described as up-and-coming for the entire duration of your residence without completing the transition, an apartment in one of those neighborhoods. And Elena, whose belief in me had grown specific enough over 4 years that it had become a structural force, I was either living up to or quietly holding from underneath, and I had long since stopped being able to tell which. She thought I had been promoted. That word was mine. Not assignment, not arrangement. Promotion, followed 3 weeks before the gala by a salary figure. I had revised upward by 40% because the actual retention number was large enough that accepting it required an explanation that didn't fit the shape of the story we were already telling about ourselves. The suit had arrived before the call, charcoal Italian wool, a label I couldn't pronounce. From a house that does not discuss price, a card from Priya, Thorne's assistant, who communicated in single sentences the way certain people do, as though complete ones might constitute a contract, that said only, "For Thursday." The jacket fit the way clothes don't fit off a rack. I stood in the bathroom for 11 minutes with it on, listening to Elena move through the apartment, and did not come out until I heard her settle into the bedroom. Thorne's first words to me, on the 41st floor, with the city arranged like a schematic behind him. "You have the architecture of a man people listen to." I have since edited that sentence in my own memory into something more flattering. The version I tell myself is that he called me a winner. He said no such thing. He said architecture, meaning the face, the height, the particular stillness I carry in rooms where I'm not entirely comfortable. A stillness that reads as authority rather than what it has always been, which is a coping mechanism developed across years of being the wrong kind of visible. He slid a folder across the desk. Inside was a photograph of me taken from a distance, outside my building on a Thursday morning. I was carrying coffee. I had not noticed anyone. Most people closed the folder. I closed it, then I opened it again. Here is the clinical shape of what he was proposing. A charity gala, 400 donors, a foundation he chaired, a building with its own name. A prosthetic developed over 18 months, undetectable at conversational distance. His presence was required in 2 places simultaneously. One evening, a technology test, nothing more. The fee was $30,000. The suit was already paid for, he said. I was not being asked to do anything illegal, delivered with the timing and effect of a physician, saying this won't hurt, not to reassure me, but to establish that the sentence had been spoken in a form that could be recalled. I want to be honest about the specific shape of my reasoning that night, standing in the dark in front of the garment bag while Elena slept. What I thought was, $30,000 is 4 months of loan repayment. This is a party with a prop. And then, last, the mask exists whether or not I wear it. That final thought is the one I return to with the least charity toward myself. It presents itself as neutrality. It is the kind of reasoning that is actually a decision wearing neutrality's clothes. The kind you learn to identify, once you have made it enough times, by the particular ease with which it arrives. Now I need to tell you what the gala actually felt like, because this is the part that makes everything else coherent. I walk through the door, and the room reorganizes. Not dramatically, no parting crowd, no sudden attention. A recalibration. The way a space adjusts when someone enters whom it has already decided. Matters before they speak. A man in a well-cut suit moves toward me, with his hand extended, and says, "Mr. Thorne, I wanted to catch you before the remarks." I say I'm glad he did. A woman from a philanthropic foundation touches my arm and says she's relieved to hear things have stabilized. I tell her the picture is clearer now. I hold the glass at the angle I have studied. Thumb at the base, fingers loose, the slight forward tilt he uses when he has decided to take someone seriously. And I stand in the center of the room's attention without deflecting it. For 4 hours, the face I'm wearing makes everything I actually am sufficient. More than sufficient. The debt does not exist here. The junior title does not exist here. There is only the architecture of a man people listen to, and for 4 hours it belongs to me in every functional sense. A man who manages a sovereign wealth fund leans close near the end of the evening and says, "I look like myself again." I say, "I feel it." He has no reason not to believe me. The face he is reading is a face he has always known. The money arrived the next morning. Hold that. Not the mask, not the room, the morning after. The deposit notification, the account balance, the specific texture of the quiet before Elena woke up. I thought, briefly, about the technician's phrase. Cleaner than the last one. Turned it over once. Found no immediate place to put it, and set it down. 6 weeks later, Priya's email. Thursday, same car, same room, same man who never offered a name. The second engagement was a board dinner. The third, a private meeting with three men, whose names I was asked not to retain. By the fourth engagement, I had internalized Thorne's pause, the beat he holds before anything that carries weight, slightly longer than natural, which reads in a room as deliberation rather than the calibrated restraint it actually is. I had learned the angle of the glass, the quality of attention he directs at people, that makes them feel specifically selected. I was becoming, in measurable increments, a more reliable version of a man who was demonstrably struggling to be a reliable version of himself. What I knew during this period, and I am deliberately not using the version of this story that protects me, was that the biometric logs existed. Every room I entered as Thorne was a room where my retinal pattern, my fingerprint, my voice, were being registered in systems I could not access. The accounts were mine in every traceable and legal sense. I knew this the way you know the location of a fire exit in a building you use every day. Noted, acknowledged, never expected to become relevant. I continued because the debt was real and the deposits were real. And because Elena's sister, who had maintained a quiet skepticism about me for years that her sister couldn't quite see, had called the previous week to say she finally understood what he saw in the work. The story Elena was now telling had become a structure I was living inside. Structures require maintenance. I was not trapped. I was load-bearing. Then Priya's Tuesday email arrived with an attachment. The transaction record showed $47. 2 million distributed through an architecture sophisticated enough to require months of forensic attention, with one traceable origin, a biometric authentication from a charity gala 9 weeks earlier. My retinal pattern, my fingerprint, pressed to a surface introduced to me as a temperature scanner near the entrance, my voice, requesting sparkling water, repurposed for a secondary voice authorization I had not knowingly triggered, except that I had provided every element that made it possible. I had walked into the room voluntarily. I had pressed my finger to the surface. I had asked for the water. I had accepted 7 deposits into an account in my name across 4 months. I had told Elena the bonus came through. There is no architecture of innocence assembled from those materials, and I have not located one since. I call Thorne. He answers on the second ring. He says the annual retention arrangement is $1 million. He says I will want to consult an attorney. He says any attorney I speak to will require, of course, the full documented history of my involvement, which is, he notes, quite thorough. He says I'm very good at this. He says I'm better than the last one. There it is. Not a threat. A filing notation. The last one. Meaning a prior arrangement. A prior man with the right face and the right debt load and the right magnitude of need for confirmation. The operation predated me. It had been refined, calibrated around a specific profile. A man who says yes into a phone before he considers what he is agreeing to, who can be handed a folder containing a surveillance photograph of himself and, after closing it once, open it again, who holds the mask up to the light long enough that wearing it becomes the easier question, cleaner than the last one. An efficiency metric noted in passing on a tablet, filed, forgotten before the door closed. The million arrived Thursday. I told Elena the role had expanded. She said, I always knew this was in you. There are 4 suits in the closet now, hung in order. I know which one corresponds to which kind of room. My own face is still in the bathroom mirror. I check early, before she wakes, at the angle where the light arrives without flattery. Still there. The surprise is smaller than it was. I notice that the surprise is smaller, and then I go and make the coffee. You are certain, wherever you are, that you would have closed the folder, that $30,000 is not enough to unlock what comes after, that the reasoning is too thin to hold a person who is paying attention. I understand that certainty precisely. I held it for exactly as long as it cost me nothing to hold it. So here is the question the story won't answer for you. Marcus knew the biometric logs existed, took the deposits and stayed. Was that a man being dismantled 1 careful inch at a time? Or a man who recognized the door, understood exactly what was behind it, and chose to walk through anyway?